You have tuned in to an encore presentation of Cascadia News Now on KMRE 102.3 FM. Thanks so much for listening. It's Cascadia News Now, and I'm Stephanie Contouris. And today is International Women's Day. Our normal co-hosts Tim Johnson and Dave Willingham are stepping aside tonight. Thank you for supporting Women's Voices, Tim and Dave. We will see you next week. Tonight, I'm welcoming Tehzeen Mohammed Ali, an environmental engineer, an immigrant, a mother, and a Muslim who works towards combating Islamophobia. Welcome, Tehzeen.
Thank you for having me.
And I'm also welcoming longtime International Women's Day organizer, activist, former president of Washington State Federation of Women, and sometimes Eleanor Roosevelt impersonator, Catherine Chambers. Welcome, Catherine.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
And it is the 100th anniversary of International Women's Day today. And the theme is Be Bold for Change. I'm just going to throw that out there. I mean, I feel like I've been bold before. What does that mean, be bold for change? How does that theme hit you?
I think one of the things is to do something that makes you uncomfortable and get outside your comfort zone and kind of inspire others to do the same.
Does being on a radio show count?
Yes, definitely. This is the first for me.
Well, yes, I think that given the circumstances that we're facing right now, we have to be bold because we are facing some very strong opposition, and that's what's going to make things happen, is if we're bold.
Great. And I want to say a special thank you to tonight. Our correspondent Rosa Tobin had a chance to interview some Western Washington University international students. And we're going to start out with a clip of an interview from Alini.
So in general, on International Women's Day, you receive a rose. You receive a rose from your father, from your significant other, and from your grandfather, like from man in your life. Yeah, it's like a lot of commodified reasons to be happy about being a woman. We don't want your flowers today. We want your respect throughout the year. And that is, to me, the meaning of International Women's Day. Women issues, first of all, are human issues. And it might sound redundant, but some people still haven't acknowledged that. And then they are also environmental issues because women have been historically the people taking care of Earth. Violence, incarceration, drug policies, every single issue that you think about is a women issue. Everything in the world ties back to women and to the powerful, like overly powerful examples of women that we have in our lives and just in our history that we don't often give credit to. Although I have a lot of skepticism with the climate around the 8th of March. I like the idea of celebrating women in that day, but I don't think that it is a festivity, especially not in this political climate, because we're dying and we're exposed and we're like now more than ever subjected to a lot of violence in many different ways, institutionally, in the streets. I don't know. To me, women issues cannot be erased from the political context. And I think that acknowledging that and giving space for broadening the definition of what women mean and making sure that women who are underrepresented in that definition can speak is very essential. Saying this doesn't mean that I'm not hopeful on what this day means and how we can move forward from that, but it also means that we should take responsibility.
That was international student, Western Washington University international student Alini from Brazil. And she was talking about some of the traditions of International Women's Day in Brazil, but also that International Women's Day is not just a day to celebrate. So here it is. It's 100 years of International Women's Day. Why do we even need International Women's Day anymore?
Well, I think that we need International Women's Day because women are still facing some of the strong challenges that they have faced for the last 100 years. We've made some strides in education and in many other ways, but we're still facing some very strong challenges throughout the world, not just in the United States, but all over the world. And in some places across the world, they've made some advancements that we haven't been able to achieve here in this country.
I think also the contrast is that over 100 years ago, the life of women was also different, and that lifestyle is changing. And of course, it's changing at variable rates and in different ways in different parts of the world. But there are a lot more women who are balancing work and family. There are a lot more women pursuing higher education degrees than there were 100 years ago. And so you're actually experiencing more challenges as we try to enter those different realms and succeed in them. And I think that the challenges are not necessarily greater, but it's changing within the context of how we're moving through the world over time.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think things are changing for women in some countries more than others, mm-hmm. And we have seen a lot of progress, but we certainly see a lot of pushback. And I don't think there's any way to talk about international women and local and global women and national women's issues without talking about the current administration and some of the attacks, unfortunately, that specifically impact women, like funding mm-hmm. for Planned Parenthood and funding for women's issues. I mean, Catherine, you have been an activist for at least a decade. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think that you might have thought that you wouldn't see some of these fights again.
Right. At the rally today, I just said,
What rally was that?
The International Women's Day rally at City Hall today. And I just said, I'm pissed because I don't think that we're going to have to continue to deal with these issues in 2017. And the pushback and the way that, you know, we have a president that degraded women and talked about women in such a horrific way, and still got elected. We're continuing to see pushback on our safe and legal right to abortion, and pushback in terms of cutting funding for women's issues, domestic violence, sexual assault services, all of those kind of things.
And one of the things Eleni says is, I mean, she talks about women's issues being human issues, and obviously the reverse is true. So when we look at the attack on healthcare, for instance, mm-hmm. the way that impacts women is, I mean, it is a human issue. It impacts everybody, but the way that it can manifest mm-hmm. Towards women is very different, I think, and very unique. And so I think that she makes some really, really good points, and I really appreciated her interview. She talks also about women's issues being environmental issues, and that was a unique perspective for me. I mean, certainly we know that women work the land and women are connected to the land. But does anybody want to kind of take a stab on why do you think, Eleni said, that women's issues are environmental issues?
Well, one of the things I heard in an interview today on the Joe Tian show with someone that was talking about the tribal issue at Standing Rock and thanking the women for their environmental work over the many years that women have really taken the lead. And I think that we need to recognize that women have taken the lead on a whole lot of issues that they didn't always get credit for. Men got the credit for that, but they were the ones doing the work behind the scenes. And I think that women understand the connection between the earth and the things that are produced and provided to us. I think they understand it on a different level.
One thing that, I mean, women and men both work the land. There's no Absolutely. Doubt about that. Yeah. And we're very lucky in this community to have organizations like Community to Community that's a woman-led community organization and brings up issues about food justice. But I think women and food, I mean, we could do show after show about women and food, right? But I think that we globally are very connected to being food bringers. Mm-hmm. And so I think that there are ways that the environmental issues maybe impact us.
Right. I think part of it, I always sometimes always think when I think of environmental issues and women issues, I think of water and sanitation mm-hmm. and access to some of Absolutely. The basic, those basic necessities in developing countries that become, that kind of prevent women from reaching their full potential. Mm-hmm. So for example, just accessing water takes hours a day to get to, and that is usually women's work to mm-hmm. carry that water from the source and back to their homes. And so it's sort of indirectly connected to environmental issues. And then one other thing that I think about is this hierarchy of needs where if you can't meet some of your basic needs, then you can't even think about something larger. And so if you're worrying about your day-to-day access to fundamental food or water mm-hmm. or your land or what the harvest is going to be like, you can't really think about when am I going to get my degree or how am I going to pursue higher education. Like you have to meet those basic things that are tied to environmental issues and developmental issues before you can even have the capacity to – not capacity isn't the right word, but like the privilege to think of something greater that mm-hmm. you could do.
So. And sometimes I think it quite literally is capacity. I mean, if you are the fundamental nurturer of your family, and not all women are, but historically and globally, a lot of women's roles are being the nurturer of their family, that you may not have the capacity. And I think women here and abroad often put aside their own education and maybe some of their own development. And we're going to talk more about education, but certainly the call for an International Women's Day, even though this is the 100th anniversary, we may have gotten somewhere, is just as strong. Alini talked about how the men in Brazil give women a rose, which I thought was a beautiful image. But yet she says, like, we don't want your rose. Like, we want you to stand up for us. We don't want your rose. Mm-hmm. So how do you in your personal lives balance that, let's celebrate women and let's keep fighting?
Well, I think for me is that one of the things I said earlier today at the rally is that we need men to be standing up for this issue of women's rights, because women's rights are human rights. And as women are supported and prosper in our community, the whole community prospers. And we would be a lot further along if men were saying that this was a priority, that women's rights were important and they were a priority. And here we are with organizations that are opposing things that are good for women that are led by men. Primarily. And so we need men to be standing up and being that voice so that we can really make the changes that we need to have.
Absolutely. And I just want to say you are listening to Cascadia News Now. I'm mm-hmm. Stephanie Contours, and our guest co-hosts for this International Women's Day are Tazeen Muhammad Ali, and you just heard Catherine Chambers. And I was just talking about how do we find that balance where we are celebrating maybe our successes, Tazeen, you talked about that we've come a long way, and at the same time work hard for the changes we still need to make.
I think personally as a mom of two young girls, it's sort of like, it's almost an opportunity to personally see these little people grow up from like helpless little infants and try to envision what sort of women they might become. And it just becomes personal very easily when you have people in your life that are going to, that you wonder, where are we going to be in 10 years, in 20 years, and how are they going to see their world as women? And it's almost like an opportunity to be like, wow, I can mold them. And you can do a lot of things as a parent, but then there's also forces that are totally outside your control. And I'm suddenly that much more aware of those things that could influence how their self-confidence or what they think they can be or how they can think or what kinds of things they envision themselves becoming or roles that they might play. And it's just interesting to see it from like the eyes of a four-year-old doing role play to like where that might lead and to have that influence in how what kind of books I choose, mm-hmm. which my husband and I choose to read to them or what to show them. And it's kind of exciting, but it's also, given the current administration, a little alarming. Like, I'm not excited by talking to her about what it means to be the leader of this country right now because I don't have a good example for her.
Mm-hmm. So role models are one example. Yes. And just the symbolism, and I think that's what Eleni was talking about, the symbolism of a rose and where are symbols of strength. So I want to bring up two symbolic things that happened this week that I thought were at the least ironic. So on Tuesday, the Statue of Liberty went dark for 2 hours. And the Statue of Liberty, in case you didn't know, was run by the National Park Service, who have been champions in one way or another yes. since January. And we love them. The National Park Service said that it was an unintentional outage. Social media didn't necessarily agree with that. We heard some questions on Twitter about that and a lot of commentary about what does it mean that the Statue of Liberty went dark for 2 hours. Leaders of the Women's March said that the Statue of Liberty was on strike, which I really liked that. And conversely, our iconic symbol, I don't know if you know if you want to save it, manhood, but certainly finance, Wall Street's raging bull, had dropped in front of it the Fearless Girl statue this week. And it was an advertising agency in Wall Street that they really wanted to make this point of women standing up to finance institution. So I think that those are powerful and great. But I also think, going back to teasing what you said, is where do we have symbols of strong women? And maybe we don't have symbols of strong women at the head of our leadership. As a matter of fact, I also saw on social media today, you know, in light of women are supposed to be on strike, which is a whole other issue, whether or not women could be on strike today. But Samantha Bee said that women are on strike in the White House administration every single day because there are no women in the White House administration. So yeah. I think you made an excellent point about that. And again, you're listening to Cascadia News Now, and I'm Stephanie Contours with Catherine Chambers and Tazeen Mohammed Dali. We had our correspondent, Rosa Tobin, as I said, interviewed some Western Washington University International students. And we are going to hear from Zoe from China.
I have been American about 4 or 5 years. The first year I came here, I felt so stressful. As you know, it's like a really different situation than in your home country. You don't have any friends, you don't have any family. You just came here and everything is totally new to you. You cannot just stay here and say, okay, I will just stay home every day. You cannot do that because you have to go to class, you have to meet some new friend, you have to talk to them. So it was a challenge for me in the first year. But I mean, it's really helped me to know different stereotype and personality. My parents, the purpose sent me to here because they want me like to talk to different people. They don't want me just, okay, study. They don't want me to do that. So they want me to make some friends here. Yeah. I don't think I just like to study from a book, but truly from my personal experience. It's so amazing to hear some people with a different culture with you. I really wish like one day the people from Western country can come to the Asian country to get to know of us. Have the personal reconnection, the personal relationship with each other.
That was Zoe, who is a Western Washington University international student from China, talking about the difficulty just coming here and yet why it's really important for her parents sent her here specifically, not because they thought she'd get a better education than China in China, but because they wanted to expose her to different cultures, and how she appreciated that. She ended by saying she really hopes that we will go to Asia as well. But I think that the question of our education and our educational system versus some very advanced places in the world, and yet some very really difficult places in the world, is a huge question about women and girls. And Tazeen, I know you have some thoughts about that.
Yeah, I think there's, I mean, two themes. Catherine just was talking about, we're talking about STEM, which is science, technology, engineering, math careers, and how there's a deficit of representation of women in those fields. But then there's also all these other fields that don't get as much credit that women are working in and as much pay. But in terms of STEM, I read an article recently that was just, it was really interesting, where it's not that we need to look like we can become an engineer. It's that you should be able, essentially, mm-hmm. it said you should be able to wear pink and wear frills and have glitter and still be taken seriously. Like, you shouldn't have to be less feminine in order for people to take you more seriously in those fields.
Science versus feminine.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's not one or the other. And it starts really young, where it's like, oh, that thing's pink, that means it's not real, or it's not, you know, you if there's a pink doctor's kit, it's almost like it's less, it shouldn't have to be, I guess I'm having a hard time sort of articulating.
Do you remember there was, and Ellen DeGeneres made fun of it, that there was some pen set that came out that was a pen set for girls, like, it was pink flowery pens, and girls could not, somehow the implication was, use normal pens? Like, why do we have to have flowers on
special
our pens
things, yeah.
in order to write? And I think you're talking about a huge ghettoization of young women, and what, and that you were saying earlier about your young girls and how it starts at such a young age, mm-hmm. the conscious and subconscious influencing of young students.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I mean, I've been working with locally AAUW, American Association of University Women, and one of their focuses is on STEM. So we support Tech Track, which is junior high school students being able to go to PLU and have a week of science and math and technology. Girls Go Tech at the community college. We do a high school scholars program. But all that is great, and they need to see mentors, and we're looking at how we can get mentors for women after they graduate even. There's a big kind of a gap there about what's the support that we give women when they're entering the career, their career phase. Do they come in at the same salary as men? Do they get the same kind of support? So that's an area that we're looking at right now. I'm really concerned. I am a big supporter of STEM, and I really never felt like I had that as an option. But I want to look at, you know, how we value all the work that women do. And women do a lot of menial, very low pay work. And why is that not valued, you know, as important? And how can we raise that level?
So teachers' salaries are not all teachers are women, but teaching is sort of mm-hmm. been associated as a women's field. And back in the day, you could be a teacher or a nurse, and that was it.
Right.
So it's consistently rewarded at a lower level.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think Finland in general scores really high in terms of like their math or their mm-hmm. science, the mm-hmm. students coming out of high school. And they were talking about how teacher pay in Finland is like, it's a very, very highly valued career, and mm-hmm. they're paid really, mm-hmm. really well. And so, you know, as soon as you do something like that, you see the result. You know, they're educating the next generation. And
yes.
so there's this, that recognition has been made, and it's not, it's a career that's highly regarded. And I think people here value it, like, oh, you're a teacher, you're providing such really good service, but that sentiment isn't matched on the financial side.
That's absolutely.
So right. Here we have this one-two thing where on one hand, traditionally women's roles are rewarded less financially, and then we have these tech roles and engineering roles that are paid highly that women have a harder time getting into. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, putting that together, it's kind of a one-two punch. And Tazine, I'd really love to hear, you're an environmental engineer, if you're willing to talk about your personal experiences and how has it been for you?
So I started out doing environmental science, which actually I thought was an awesome way to step into engineering because you kind of get the ecological perspective mm-hmm. that sometimes if you just start as an engineer and you end as an engineer, and I wanted to work in the environment and in ecological systems, that actually gave a really strong and kind of holistic foundation. I have been extremely lucky. I've worked for the Washington State Department of Ecology for almost all of my career before I even became an engineer. And I have had a really good experience as somebody who works for the state. And I also have had two women supervisors who both had families, who've both worked part-time at some point in their career. And I feel like maybe that experience might have been different if somebody that was my boss was mm-hmm. had a different experience. And you shouldn't have to worry about that. But I got really excited when I was in maternity leave. We were having a change in supervisors, and I was a little bit nervous because I'm working kind of in a satellite office, and my supervisor's in Olympia, and I was worried about that transition, that the person wouldn't know me. And I was actually just really excited when I found out that she was a woman, she was a minority, she's had three girls, and there was just something that there was that connection and that was made even before I met her. And that I think all those combinations along with family support has helped me get to where I am. And it's given me the flexibility I need.
You know, I think that's a really good point. Women often are highly discriminated in their workplace in terms of taking time off, maternity leave. Most places don't have access to maternity leave. This is kind of a different situation in the United States than in other developed countries around the world. But women lose, you know, a lot of their career movement because many men are supervisors and they don't have that issue. They don't take time off. They've got, you know, wives that take care of that stuff for them. So it's something that we really need to work on in terms of public policy related to maternity leave and family leave and parental leave and how we look at those things.
Absolutely. I want to bring up, we just have a couple minutes left before the top of the hour. You are listening to Cascadia News Now with Tazine Muhammad Ali and Catherine Chambers. I'm Stephanie Contours. Just a couple minutes left, and I want to bring up another aspect of tech that doesn't always get talked about a lot, and that is the harassment mm-hmm. of women, both in, and I'm so glad, Tazine, that you have escaped that harassment. And there's a little part of my heart that was like, Washington State. It's because Washington State is such a great state so many ways, especially the past couple months. But a lot of women do face harassment. There was sexual harassment charges at Uber just in the past couple of weeks. Google has had issues, and they've certainly had issues in terms of having women in the higher echelons mm-hmm. of their companies. Mm-hmm. And yet there's been so many complaints of harassment that are not always dealt with. And there's a new term, we don't have a lot of time to go into it, that's called a diversity deficit, where they're really charging. People are starting to charge these companies by saying, mm-hmm. if you keep putting off the diversity aspect, it's not tokenism, that it's hurting your company. Mm-hmm. And it's going to hurt your company if you don't have women at all levels. And I hope that they're starting to realize it. I also want to bring up, maybe this is a topic for an entire show, and something our normal co-host Dave Willingham would be very connected with, is how women just in gaming, not who are working in gaming, although that's an issue as well, but women who just play role-playing games mm-hmm. or online games have been harassed, sent death threats on Twitter. There was Gamergate in 2014, and this is stuff that we as women have to call out. And it's International Women's Day, so I'm here calling it out. And you are listening to Cascadia News Now, and we are going to be right back after this message.
Women's Spirit Coalition, eliminating violence against Native women and promoting the well-being of Native families and communities. We envision a nation where Native women live safely and where Women's Spirit Coalition is the leader in ending violence against Native women. You can find us on Facebook at Women's Spirit Coalition or online at womensspirit.net.
You are listening to Spark Radio on KMRE LP 102.3 FM in Bellingham. Your community, your voice, your station.
When I came here, it was a cultural shock. It was like completely different. All the like people were different and I barely spoke English.
And you are listening to KMRE 102.3 in Bellingham, your community, your voice, your station. I'm Stephanie Contouris, and you are tuned in to Cascadia News Now. And we're doing a very, very special episode this week. Our normal co-hosts, Dave Willingham and Tim Johnson, will be back next week. Thank you so much for supporting Women's Voices this week, guys. We are joined by Tazeen Muhammad Ali and Catherine Chambers. And I'm Stephanie Contouris. And we've been talking quite passionately, as a matter of fact, about women in the tech fields. And I just mentioned something about diversity deficit. And Tazeen, you had something you wanted to add about that.
Yeah, I just, when you talk about that diversity deficit, there's so many things that we've designed in this world that have had men on the table and women are absent. And the product of that is that it doesn't consider some of those factors. And just a simple example is not as much a design problem, but when I look at my toxicology textbook, it has maximum contaminant limits of that are exposure, like health hazards, if you work in a place where there's contaminants. And those are based on body weight, and often average male that weighs like 170 pounds or something like that, or 190 pounds. And there isn't another one. You know, there's one contaminant limit and then dosages on medicines. And it's just like if you had a 50-50, if you didn't have that diversity deficit, somebody would point out, is like, well, that doesn't apply to me. And I know that every time when I take NyQuil, if I need NyQuil, I take half the dose that what's written there. I'm a small person. Not all women are as tiny, but it just, I think the way our bodies and organs work are different, and that diversity deficit is demonstrated in the way things are labeled.
Yeah, absolutely. And I never thought about that, taking a dose. Now I got to check my doses on everything. But it's an excellent point about the workplace. And we have been featuring our correspondent this week, Rosa Tobin, interviewed international students from Western Washington University. And we are going to hear from Olga from Russia.
Shock. It was like completely different. All the like people were different and I barely spoke English. In Russia, people were judgmental. So I became more tolerant here. People back home don't like different, you know, everybody's kind of like the same. In Russia, people don't like any like homosexual stuff. So I learned a lot about it here because I've never like faced it before when I was home. And I became more tolerant to everything and I learned how other people think. I get this stereotype stuff a lot, like, and I'm already kind of tired because I've been here almost for 4 years and I, like, constantly get it and people just like, oh, where are you from? They, like, hear my accent, I'm, like, from Russia, and they're like, oh, it must be so cold there. I was, like, hearing from people, have you ever been to Siberia? I was like, I'm from Siberia. And they're like, what? I thought people didn't live there because it's cold. Yeah, so that's like one thing about Russia, that's not that cold as everybody thinks. Yeah. And Yeah, and we don't just, like, drink vodka every day for water. Because I get it a lot. Like, oh, do you just, like, drink vodka every day? But it's just, it's literally, we're on different sides of the world. So you can't say that, like, some people are bad, some people are good. Yeah, there is good and bad in every culture.
It's Olga, who is a Western Washington University international student from Russia, talking about some culture shock and different stereotypes that we have of each other. I want to point out that International Women's Day actually happened because of Russian women, in part, in 1917. And there was a solidarity strike of textile workers in Russia. And and that actually International Women's Day started off as a Russian holiday and then expanded to. So I think that that's a nice thing to point out. So things are very, very different for women everywhere. And we're trying to being primarily American women. Tazeen, were you born here? I don't even know.
I was born in Kenya and I moved here when I was 16.
16. So you've had some different experiences.
Yeah, my dad was, his job made him move around, and I lived in Egypt and Botswana and traveled with the family to surrounding countries. It was an amazing experience.
So you have actually lived the differences of women in different countries.
And even within those countries, mm-hmm. there was such a contrast. You know, mm-hmm. I was definitely, you know, in a middle-class family, privileged, going to school, private British schools because mm-hmm. we moved around and my dad's company would pay for schooling. And yet in Kenya, I'm in a country where until after I moved and I was a little bit more mature, did I realize, you know, it's not that I wasn't completely aware, but I didn't really even think about it that there are women in rural villages and girls who can't get to school or who miss school every month because there's no access to toilets. Mm-hmm. And just the contrast of my experience in the same country, you know, and now we're trying to contrast like our American experience with international experiences. But even within the same country, you can live in these silos where you're not necessarily aware, especially as a young child. But then some people stay in those silos.
I have certainly been in different economic strata in this country, so and different parts of the country. But I completely hear you. And there were times when my mother and I were on welfare lines, and then there have been times when I lived with a family that had much more money. So I know I hear what you're saying, and many mm-hmm. of us don't necessarily interact with different strata. And I don't know, Catherine, if you want to speak to that yourself.
Well, yes. I what I wanted to point out is, you know, I have been in different positions in my life, and I want to point out that many women their economic position changes as their relationships end or begin, and so it's important to remember that women's economic situation usually goes down by about 50 or 60% when they end a relationship, usually with a male who is working and making, a good living. And that a lot of times women's income is supplemental to that. And then when they go to live on that supplemental income, they find how difficult it is. So women are very much on the edge economically, and most women, you know.
Right, absolutely. And I want to bring up, this is an excellent time to bring up Cascadia Weekly's Gristle this week. Talked about the issuance of the Bellingham Community Survey. The survey is about to come out. Mm-hmm. And the three top issues in Bellingham, economic insecurity, housing insecurity, mm-hmm. and homelessness. And I know homelessness has been an ongoing conversation in our city for a long time, but I think the ways that women are impacted by homelessness and the ways that homelessness reflects women, one of the things that I wanted to bring up, if you hadn't heard, was that Bellingham has established that they are going to build a new 24-hour homeless shelter. It's going to be between C and D streets downtown or close to downtown. And one of the things that I'm I my jury's out about the shelter, but we'll see how it is. But one of the things that I'm really glad about is there's going to be no proselytizing. The fact that it's a 24/7 is because what are people supposed to do during the day? And it's really, really fast, especially, I mean, we've had snow 5 times this winter, which is not normal. But even when we have torrential rains, the whole idea to me of, okay, well, it's daytime, you know, get out and find a job. It's just completely not rational.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, you know, having worked in this field in the past, one of the things that's concerning to me is that people who are homeless want to be self-directing. And so I'm somewhat concerned. I'm very happy that we are going to provide some more housing for people, but I am very concerned that the people who are homeless are asking to be self-ruled or self-governed, and we haven't provided that type of housing for people in this community. And there's a lot of rules and regulations that you have to be willing to conform with in order to get housing. And so I have some questions about that. And having been somebody who's been at the whim of the housing market here, it's difficult. You know, it's difficult to place roots in a community if you have to move every 2 years because your lease runs out and they want to raise the rent and you can't afford it and you end up having to move. So then you've got neighborhoods that are based on people who own homes more than the people who actually live there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I've been in a similar situation. And I'm thinking of the chant. I've been to some different protests, and the chant comes up to me that I've heard, not about us, without us. And so, and to be fair, I haven't been involved in these talks, and I know that our city, our municipal government, I believe they have the best heart, and I believe they're trying to solve some insurmountable problems that, to be fair, because our mental health funding on a state level has been cut, and because populations increase, and many other reasons that have increased our homeless population. So things are difficult. But I also wonder how many people who have represented homeless life or have been involved in that have been involved in making the decisions. As you say, when people say they want to be self-sufficient, how are they being taken into consideration when we're trying to do problem solving? Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, it is not possible for me to talk about homelessness here without thinking about homelessness worldwide and the horrific, there's no other word for it, the devastatingly horrific refugee situation, which I believe is the highest number of refugees in our recorded history globally. We have almost 5 million refugees, and I've seen several reports that estimate 3/4 of Syrian refugees alone are women and children. And I don't know what, if anything, we can say about that. But I guess I'll ask you both. I'm sure I'm not the only American that's sitting here thinking, what can we do? And it feels like there's not much we can do.
I don't know if I have any concrete action items on what you can do. I mean, there's always the usual donation. But then I think one of the biggest things is empathy. A lot of people, it's easy for us to remove ourselves from that situation because we're not in it. But to just put yourself in the mindset of, like, what would it take for you to decide to flee with your kids, your baby in your arms, on a boat where you could drown? Like, if you can just, I think of that, and I think of, you know, what kind of a desperate situation I would have to be in to do that with my family. And I just feel like when you think of it that way, you just can't think of it as, oh, they're just taking advantage, or why can't they just go find somewhere else to go? Or, you know, these people are not, they've run out of choices. This is not even a choice. It's almost like it's run or die.
And we, you know, what breaks my heart about this situation is we have so much. You know, we're always being told what a wealthy and prosperous country that we live in, and yet we're not, when this kind of situation comes up and refugees need a place to go, is the same time that we're closing the doors and, you know, so which part is a lie? Is it a lie that we're prosperous and we have so much that we could give? Or is it that we just don't? I mean, we know what the results were during the Holocaust from closing our borders and not allowing people to come in and how devastating that is. And we know what the situation is in Syria right now and how dangerous it is. And so it's how uncaring of a place are we? You know, it's yeah.
Excellent, excellent word, and it's an excellent perspective. That was Catherine Chambers. She's my co-host this week, along with Tazeen Muhammad Dali. I'm Stephanie Contouris, and you are listening to Cascadia News Now. And our correspondent, Rosa Tobin, interviewed some international students from Western Washington University. We're going to go to our last one now, and this is Fatima from Saudi Arabia.
Stereotypes is everywhere. Generalizations is everywhere. So just have that in mind when talking about identities for people. It's not fair to say that all Americans are weird. It's not fair to say all college students do parties. So I feel like people should just know that people who belong to the same thing do not have the same way of expressing their identity. You know, sometimes it's hard to explain like yourself to people. And it's always different within the culture. So I can't speak for the culture. So this is like my big message, you know. Don't stereotype people. The basic thing is if you don't know what to do in the relationship with someone, please ask. Please ask the person. I mean, I understand that some people feel like I might be hurt or it might be sensitive to ask me about these things, but it's not sensitive as much as more respectful. So in general, one of the must things that I love about my community is that we are very close to each other and they work very, very hard for their community. And people are very close to each other. So you don't see, for example, homeless people on the street. We always have things that are going on for people who want to, like, get married but they don't have enough money, people who want to have houses but they can't afford the rent. I feel like if you need something, you know where to go and you know that there are people that will help you. From what I know, people don't feel lonely or feel that they can't live because of social problems or pressure. So this is, like, my biggest love. This is what I really love about my community, because when I go there, I feel like, oh my gosh, like, everybody is helping everybody.
And that was Fatima from Saudi Arabia. She, along with our other interviews this week, is one of the Western Washington University international students interviewed by our correspondent, Rosa Tobin. I want to point out, thank you, Rosa, but I also want to point out that it's International Women's Day. Cascadia News Now is a 100% women show this week, including our engineers, Suzanne and Merrill, and our correspondent, Rosa, and our guest co-hosts, Catherine Chambers and Tazeen Muhammad Ali. Fatima had some really, really good points. And I thought when she talked about reaching out and asking questions, Tazeen, it reminded me of your speech that just completely moved us at the Women's March on January 21st. And I wrote it down because you spoke to, what was it, 12,000 Bellinghamsters.
I think probably there was the smallest core of people who could actually hear me, but I'm glad it got recorded.
It has been seen. And we aired it on Cascadia News Now as well.
Yes, you did.
And but you said some really powerful things. And I don't want to speak for you. Do you want to kind of reprise the things?
Yeah, I mean, I like what Fatima said about talking to us. I think that's one of the messages I said is like, talk to a Muslim. And I gave examples like which when you think of Fatima, you know, you can't see her when you just heard her, but you heard that she's from Saudi Arabia and you've heard things about women in Saudi Arabia mm-hmm, that are mm-hmm. right now tainting your vision of what she might be or what she might be doing or how she's dressed. And so we have these images that kind of, if you have a personal experience with a person, with a woman, with a Muslim woman, then that can totally like take over your understanding or awareness. And personal experiences are the best way to break down stereotypes. I think I talked about the Muslim women I know. I know my mom. And I know a convert who's a veteran of the U.S. I know my sister who climbed Mount Kilimanjaro. Like, these are not the things that you think of when you think of mm-hmm. Muslim women, Muslim mm-hmm. American women. And so that idea of, I really like what you said, just talk to us. Like, so it can be as simple. Sometimes people are worried, oh, it's just too burdensome. You know, you don't want to be always asked, well, what do you think? You're a Muslim. What do you think? You're a Muslim. But then I think the person asking also has to be aware that this person is not representing all Muslims, uh-huh. all American Muslims. Like, even within my family, there's diversity in how we express ourselves. And then when I go to Kenya, there's like Arab Muslims, there's Indian Muslims, there's African Muslims. There's just, there is no single like experience, and there's so much culture intertwined that you kind of have to open the box and let people in and break those stereotypes by getting to know people at a personal level.
And we are, not all of us, but a great many of us are ignorant. And that's why Sikhs are attacked. And mm-hmm. that's as a man was shot in Kent, and our own Sikh community was attacked after 9/11. And people don't know that there's a difference between Muslims and Arabs. People don't know that there's a difference, that so many differences exist and unique from person to person to person. So you raise this brilliant question or encouragement, reach out. But on the other hand, there's kind of this idea that why should we put the burden on people of color to solve all our problems and answer our questions and lead us into the light? So I think about that. And I think maybe me and other Americans might be like, okay, but I don't want to walk up to a woman just because she's wearing a hijab and say, hey, can you tell me about Islam? Like, that's also not fair. So as much as I loved and relished your statements on the women's rally, how do we tease that out?
I think there's definitely a personal responsibility to educate yourself, to do your homework. Mm-hmm. I'm learning more about the Black Lives Matter movement because I am not a Black woman. And so there's things that you need to do yourself. And as a parent, one of the things I ask people to do is to change the language that we talk about things and the stories that we tell. So, you know, most parents read to their children. So if you feel like you're in a narrow-minded, or you want to increase your awareness about a particular culture or a particular religion or about the civil rights movement, then get books about it. Mm-hmm. You know, you can start with preschool books with your kids. And if you don't have kids, then there are even more books that you can read or and it's almost like we have information. We have a lot of information, and you need to somehow, you know, you can't find out about everything all at once, but it really helps to have a target. Like, this is something I really feel like I don't know a lot about. If you don't know a lot about Islam, you know, you don't need to necessarily ask a Muslim every time, but at least ask a Muslim to check your source. There's a lot of bad information out there. So ask them, but, you know, go to a .org website, not some website that looks a little sketchy. And so there's that responsibility to educate yourself first, but also change the narrative and the stories that we tell. And if you hear something in the lunchroom, if you hear something, if you hear stories, if you realize, oh, this book is a little biased, go find another source of information. Try and make that box wider and wider. Mm-hmm.
And we were all in this country, regardless of what you hold dear and regardless of what you believe, regardless what I believe, we were all raised with stereotypes. And stereotypes in the media, and whether it's a black man always being a criminal, mm-hmm. or a gay person always dying or having AIDS, or whether it's Muslims always being the bad guys, or whether it's Russians always being the bad guys, these stereotypes are in our brains. And I want to say, not to give a great absolution to everybody in the world, but it's systemic, and what systemic means is you were not a willing participant in those stereotypes that formed your brain. It's not like you said, oh, give me all the rude things that have ever been said about anybody and put them in the media and put them in my brain. But they're there. It's not necessarily your fault that
but
they're
there. We all have a responsibility.
Exactly.
The other piece is
exactly.
that we have the responsibility exactly. to engage with people, understand their culture, understand their belief systems, and investigate for ourselves what is truth, and not to just take everything that's given to us,
yeah.
you know, as the truth.
So exactly. So we,
yeah.
we have them, and I think one of the biggest steps we can take is to just call ourselves on
mm-hmm.
it. And I may feel that way about Christians. You know, there's a lot I know about Christians, but when I see Christians protesting Planned Parenthood, does that mean that all Christians feel that way? But it's easy for me to make an assumption. I mean, we all hold them. And so, right, absolutely, Catherine, the first thing we can do is start to catch ourselves when we think things, and then, like Tazine said, start to research and ask questions. I think
mm-hmm.
that's absolutely brilliant, because what's happening to women in this country and everywhere, and what's happening to all kinds of people, is we are targets. And people of color are targets. Muslims are targets. Sikhs are targets. Black people, Jews are targets. There have
mm-hmm.
been mosques that have burned down, and synagogues that are being called, and daycare centers with bomb threats. We have to act now.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is sort of building that counter narrative. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, we have this baseline narrative that's, you know, from a dominant male white perspective, and we have this opportunity to counter that narrative and bring out the stories off. And it's not that the stories are there, they just need to be told.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's just we just have to find them and tell them.
And this conversation is not going to be the end, obviously, but hopefully we can start. And I think what Fatima said, I mean, she doesn't speak for everyone, but the fact that she has a voice in it, and we can hear it. And it also, all right, I'm going to step aside, give a little plug. This is community radio. And one of the things that I absolutely believe in is bringing different voices. It's amazing that you both came to speak today. I know Shirla Taboo wanted to be here, and she will come another time. And we're sending her good healing vibes, by the way. But we also want to make sure that people have the opportunity to put together their own radio programs. And so things can be led by Muslims, and things can be led by queer people, and things can be led. And that's, I think, as a community, it's easy for those of us like me who have the privilege and access to radio to maybe tokenize other people, but what can I do, and what can we all do to support other people's voices, maybe taking the lead sometimes?
Can I put a plug in for two more International Women's Day events?
Yes.
One happening right now, but you can still come down to the Bellingham Public Library. There's a movie, Equal Means Equal. It's about the history of the ERA and why we still need an Equal Rights Amendment.
And it's free.
And then we're going to go and party at Chuck and Up Brewery after that. So
also
we welcome,
yeah.
for all ages, we welcome anyone to come and join us for that as well.
And I want to say also, especially because of the shooting in Kent, that Satpal Sidhu, who is our county councilman, has spoken for the Sikh community, and he has invited everyone this Sunday for Langar, which is a sacred free kitchen, and that's from noon to 2 this Sunday, March 12th, at the Sikh temple at Pole Road. And that, unfortunately, brings us to the end of another Cascadia News Now. There's so many wonderful people to thank on this all-women show. Huge thank you to Tazeen Muhammad Ali and Catherine Chambers, my co-hosts this week. A huge, enormous thank you to our engineers, Suzanne Blaze and Meryl Hunt Paez. And thank you, Robert, our honorary woman of the week, for standing by. A big, big round of gratitude and roses for Rosa Tobin for getting those fabulous, fabulous interviews from our Western students. And Cascadia News Now is produced by me, Stephanie Contouris. Our technical director is Dave Willingham. Tim Johnson and Dave Willingham will be back next week to talk about the Planning Commission, water rights, and the future of the county jail. That's the next Cascadia News Now on KMRE 102.3 FM Bellingham, your community, your voice, your station.